Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hey, everyone. I'm super excited to be here today. Today on The Psychology of Work, we're diving into intuition, leadership, and the ripple effect of female empowerment with someone who's seen the workplace from many different angles. Annie Ripp is the founder of Let's Feel Good, a lifestyle implementation coach, and now part of the team at Wildwood Ventures, where she supports purpose-driven founders as they grow companies from the ground up. She has deep expertise in wellness curation, entrepreneurship, and now early-stage investing, and it brings a thoughtful, human-centered lens into how we build careers and companies that actually feel good to lead, whether it's fostering team cohesion, honoring individual strengths, or following your gut in business and in life. And he has a grounded and refreshing perspective. And I'm just so excited to have this conversation, Annie. Anything you want to add that I didn't add, in your bio or your description?
I think you got it all. Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here. Very excited for this conversation.
Good. Yeah, I know. Just chatting with you earlier, we have so many different points of intersection. Really, I'm a health psychologist by training who now is an entrepreneur. And you were, really started in PE and VC and then ended up founding a company in the health space. So there's like a lot of intersection just listening to you talk. But let's really start with your journey. Do you want to tell me a bit about kind of just who you are and what your past has been like?
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'll start from, the top. I graduated from school and I started my career in private equity. So I was a growth stage investment fund investing in B2B SaaS companies in Boston. Amazing experience. I was joking with you earlier about this, but I was the only female on a team of 8 men and the youngest one by about 5 years. And it was actually just like an incredible experience. They really, really taught me the ropes. Funny because I came into that job with no accounting or finance background, but they were so patient, so encouraging, and really taught me everything. And it was an incredible experience. From there, I went to a Series A fund in New York, investing in female-founded health and wellness companies. And then I went an earlier stage to an incubator, both building and investing in ideation. That was also an amazing experience. Really started to scratch that entrepreneurial itch I had. It was a very fun job. It almost felt like a reality TV show at times, where we would bring in 180 founders for these 8-week residency programs. They were, had just sold their last company. They were software engineers at big tech companies. They were, founding employees of Airbnb, Uber, and Lyft, and they wanted to start something new. Typically, they knew the area that they wanted to build in or the problem that they wanted to solve, but they didn't know what they were going to build yet. If we'd bring them in, we would, ideate with them, come up with an MVP, figure out the exact problem in the market, help them find a co-founder and execute, and it would double as their diligence at the end of the program. We would invest in self-founder, self-idea. So it was so much fun. As you can hear from my experience, I started in private equity and I ended building companies alongside founders. So it was obvious, I think. Maybe I wasn't aware of it, but it had always been in my DNA to be an entrepreneur and start something of my own. And then, parallel to that, I've had this deep passion for health and wellness. I struggled from hormone, autoimmune, gut issues, skin issues. The way that I explained it is I just never felt great. Then I became super passionate about health and wellness. Mostly it started as from more of an investment perspective. I also studied biology and economics in college. So I always loved like science and logic behind, how what we eat literally affects our cells and our biological processes. So I always had kind of an analytical itch to understand how food can be medicine and lifestyle is medicine. But it initially started as I started focusing on investing exclusively. So at the last fund that I was at in New York, I was, working pretty much exclusively with female founders, was definitely a deal lead and working with any business in the health and wellness space. And then the fund I'm currently spending part of my time with invests, exclusively in wellness. So I'd always had the kind of professional curiosity for like what is being built in the space? Where is there innovation? How can we make, preventative healthcare more accessible, more equitable, and more scalable? And I think, venture is pretty cool because it catalyzes. And it really can serve from a monetary perspective as an accelerant to create huge change in society and, you know, create, help people live healthy and happy lives. So I had like that professional bucket of curiosity in the space. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And then I had my own personal journey, which I can get into in a bit, but where I really utilized kind of food as medicine and lifestyle changes to change my own health. And I was like, oh my gosh, this stuff really works. So knowing I wanted to be an entrepreneur, being pretty obsessed with the space from like an investment and a thesis and a business model perspective, and then, you know, bringing in my own personal experience led me to start with. That's my main focus today. I moved back to Boston out of New York City, and I am building Let's Feel Good. And I'm also advising a few female founders of health and wellness companies, and then also spending some time with Wildwood, which is a pre-seed venture capital fund investing in health wellness lifestyle companies.
Amazing. So I can hear the theme, right? It's sort of like you've just been on different sides of the company, you know, whether from the investing or building it yourself. But there's always been this theme around health and wellness. And I totally see this too, right? It's like we sort of separate business from health as like personal and private or personal and professional. But these things are really, really tied together. You know, it's like when you are healthy, you perform better. And yeah, I mean, that's just everything we're focused on. With groups, really, is helping team, knowing when we get the social relationships right, like the team and the company succeed, but it really has much larger impact in terms of health and wellness outcomes. But for you, like when you think about, you know, your kind of professional or your personal and professional journey, what was the turning point that made you realize it was time to create something of your own? And how did that intuition, you know, and that feeling guide the leap that you took?
Yeah, I would say it's a mix of things. But for a bit more color on the, you know, journey I went with my own personal health, ever since I was in high school, I was bloated, fatigued, anxious, I had anxiety, skin issues, dermatitis, I had psoriasis, GI issues. And I never felt horrible, but I never felt great. And I was like, this can't be the way that we feel every day. And as I mentioned before, I started focusing on investing in health and wellness companies. So I was learning a lot about the chronic disease epidemic, and I was getting more and more curious about it. I'd leave work and I'd listen to a Mark Hyman podcast. And I'd be like, you know, it's becoming more and more obvious that 90% of chronic disease is lifestyle-driven. And the big turning point for me personally was I actually went off birth control about 5 years ago. I was like, you know, I'm making changes to my health. It doesn't really feel right to be taking this every day. Like these synthetic hormones, you don't know exactly what they are, what else is in this product. And when I did, I just didn't get curious. And I was like in my mid-20s, I thought I was healthy. And I, you know, the rest of the symptoms actually were exacerbated that I was feeling at that point. And I went to a bunch of different traditional medical providers, and my dermatologist was like, here, take, you know, doxycycline every day for your dermatitis. Take a steroid for your psoriasis or eczema, my primary outlet SSRIs for my anxiety, my OBGYNs, like, you know what? Nothing shows up in your labs or ultrasound. It was PCOS. Like, go back on the pill if you want to manage symptoms. I went to an endocrinologist because I was experiencing potentially thyroid issues, and I had a TSH, which is that general thyroid metric of 4.5, which clinically is classified as normal, but very high end of the range. Subclinically, go to a naturopathic doctor, usually indicative of something going on, but they stopped at, hey, you're normal, you're good, did no further testing. So I went off the pill. I was like 25 years old. I didn't get a period. I was like, you've got to figure out what's going on here. So I really started to explore functional medicine, and I went to a functional medicine provider who did not look at any of these issues in silo, but looked at all of them, all of the blood work, GI panels, did autoimmune antibodies, really dug deep into my hormones, all of it. And I had PCOS, I had an autoimmune disease, I had SIBO, I had gut dysbiosis, candida, I had dermatitis. I also carried more weight, I was inflamed. And instead of a medication, which I didn't want to take, and of course, there is thank God for traditional medicine. I never, ever mean to diss it. It is, you know, more acute and reactive care. I heard a really great quote the other day that if you have a heart attack, like the only place that you should ever go is a hospital. Like, please never try and take an herb for a heart attack. Right. But the reason why people get a heart attack or why you're diagnosed with diabetes is often rooted in our day-to-day choices, lifestyle. So there's a time and place for both. But I was fortunate enough to to be able to utilize functional medicine and use more preventative tactics and doing reconstruct my lifestyle to feel my best. And I was blown away. I changed how I ate, moved, slept. I left a toxic job. I figured out what was really important to me. I set boundaries with work. You know, I think I went to Cornell. I spent my whole career in venture capital. Like, hustle culture was just what you did. Everybody just burned themselves to the ground. I was living in New York City. It was go, 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 go. And I realized, like, hey, you know, life doesn't need to be that way. And I feel a whole lot better when it doesn't. So I reconstructed my life from, you know, a multitude of, from the cookware in my kitchen, swapping in on toxic, leaving work at 5:30 if I wanted to go for a long walk and be depressed, to swapping for friendship, changing the way that I ordered food on a takeout menu. And I literally reversed everything. I have made 3 cycles. I don't have symptoms. I lost, you know, a significant amount of weight and inflammation. I feel vibrant and clear. My skin and gut healed. I don't have autoimmune antibodies present on blood work. All my labs are normal. And I was like, oh my God, I feel amazing. And what I realized from that experience is that, you know, I just don't feel good as an epidemic. But at the same time that I'm healing and figuring all this stuff out, I'm working every day with founders and ironically building in the health and wellness space. And so many of them were building concerns. They're like, you know, I'm building a platform for gut issues or for hormone balancing or PCOS, endometriosis and for infertility. And it's like, why do we all not feel well? And, you know, obviously we know that chronic disease, 90% of it is preventable. And I realized, like, hey, I think I just don't feel good as a biggest indicator of chronic disease. When you just don't feel well, whether it's throat or anxiety or insomnia or, you know, painful periods or breakouts around your mouth, like whatever it may be, that kind of small tickle of I just don't feel good is an indicator of underlying. You go to our, you know, primary care doctors or traditional medical doctors, you know, at least in my experience and others that I have heard, you're often either medicated or normalized, and none of which addresses the cause of why we don't feel well. So I just became a burning passion to me, a kind of an obsession. And I realized, like, you know, we need to help especially women feel better today so that they can, you know, step into the best of themselves. Like, they can, you know, wake up every day with energy, feeling good, and really build a life of alignment, of richness, and vibrancy. And then the byproduct of that is that if we're doing the things that make us feel good in the day-to-day, we're keeping like inflammation at bay, we're mitigating metabolic dysfunction, we're keeping our gut healthy, strengthening our immune system. The byproduct of that is that we're not giving our bodies an opportunity to develop chronic disease down the road. So, you know, I just don't feel good. I think it's a loud warning sign that something is not functioning optimally. And when it's left unchecked, it can really manifest chronic disease down the road. So, that is why, that is the thesis behind Let's Feel Good. And I think the professional turning point for me is I was sitting at an office, sitting at Antler. I was working with all these founders and so many health and wellness founders, and I couldn't leave the table with them. I was like, I want to keep building. Like, let's keep ideating on this. And I was like, wow, I definitely am more passionate about making healthy, not well. And when I had that kind of phrase come into my head, I was like, it's time to go. About to build something.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like your professional journey is really rooted in your personal, right? So you're having all these feelings. And I think a lot of it for a lot of people, we're used to not feeling great. So it's sort of just below that threshold of consciousness, you know, it's sort of subconscious, you know, it doesn't, don't feel 100%, but you're also kind of used to it. And then you sort of minimize the symptoms, you know? It sounds like, and then it sounds like for you, then you started working with all these companies and realizing there's another way, and then started to like get curious about how you could actually make an impact and build something of your own.
Yeah. I think the kind of antithesis of Let's Feel Good was this, call it like professional itch to build. And I love 0 to 1. I love figuring out how can we build something? How can we make it more scalable? How can we market it? How can we really figure out where the core problem is in the market and exactly the experience. And how can we, you know, construct the first iteration of the product most efficiently and effectively solve problems and help people. Like, that entrepreneurial mindset has always been something that I've loved for my professional life. And then synthesizing that with kind of my personal passion and mission. Like, there's there's nothing to do other than start a business and really be able to access on both.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I was like earlier today, so we hired our first sales guy like recently. And so it's been really fun because there's just so much like A/B testing and like, does this messaging work? Is this really our ICP? Is it not? Like, how are we doing this? And there's so many parallels like coming out of psychology. You know, I got a doctorate in psychology, had to do a dissertation, the whole thing. And so like, there's so much research that goes into that. But I'm like, entrepreneurship and building a company is similar. It just happens a lot faster and with much looser parameters. And so for me, that is like really fun because you can just move faster and try in real time. If something's not working, you just keep going. And, you know, but when you think like sort of a social scientist or scientist in that way, you have a strategy behind it. You're just able to like test and operate a lot faster. And it feels exciting. I was just talking to Jay and we're both like very pumped to be like trying this new thing, you know, and just waiting to see what happens. And you get that like sort of thrill a lot sooner than having to wait to like get through a whole study.
Yeah. There are no rules.
Yeah. There are no rules. It's like, try this. Let's see if it works, yep. You know, and let's keep going.
Totally.
So you've spoken about the power really, you know, I know it's really important to you, the power of female empowerment. So can you really share a moment when being supported by another woman helped you shift your career or sense of purpose? And how do you really like pay that forward now? How does that impact like how you see yourself, how you see the world, how you see your company?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this is something that means a lot to me because it has been very impactful in my own journey. But I think that it's interesting. I think that we're all born with like this innate intuition and passion, these curiosities and things that we want to do with our lives. And the feedback that we get from either our parents or our bosses or our peers kind of can stunt our confidence or make us feel like, oh, like that's something that I would never do. That's something that I could admire about someone else, it's not for me. But when you're around somebody who has so much confidence, who encourages you, who tells you to take risks, that doesn't make you feel embarrassed if you fail, that, you know, tells you just take the run with it, I trust you. It builds the courage of like, I can do it. And I was really fortunate to have, I mean, this kind of lesson was instilled very early on. Like my parents were always like, when I was a little kid, I was like, oh, I want to like start a makeup company or whatever. Like, of course you can do it. Like, here are some ideas. And I never felt like anything was easy. And risk didn't feel as scary because I think I had a confidence in myself of like, I'm always going to be okay. Like, I'm always going to figure it out. Like, I'll always find a way to make it work. And I can always hear what feels right to me because I've been so supported and, you know, in particular around other women to go off one, hear what alignment feels like, hear my own intuition, and then feel confident enough to move in that direction. And I think this, I mean, I saw a lot of this when I was living in New York and, you know, especially since there's so much pressure on young people these days, that you need to graduate and you have to come into a specific career and you can't change course. You have to be there for 5 years and get a promotion and build your resume. And I mean, my parents got some things, I'm really grateful for it, but also mentors that I've had, and particularly a woman, like, this is your resume, this is your life. You're not building this for anyone else. If you want to pivot, if this situation doesn't feel right to you, like, listen to that intuition and move in a direction that feels more aligned. And I think that when you're around people that encourage you to take risks, chances, and to explore your curiosities and your passions, you obviously build confidence in that sense. And then when you're also around people that make you smart, that like figure out what your strengths are and drill those in on you. Like, you know, if you're someone who maybe isn't amazing with numbers, but you have awesome interpersonal skills, the right boss is going to lean into those. They're going to be like, you're incredible connecting with clients. Like, I want you on the space. All of our, you know, client calls. I want you to lead those. And like, that is the most empowering feeling. And if you're kind of not great with numbers, like I'm dyslexic. I make a lot of small typos and spelling errors and I flip numbers. And if you have a boss who just makes you feel horrible about that, your confidence is going to go away in all the other areas of your job. And you're not going to be as good of an employee. And, you know, more importantly, you're going to start to lose the confidence. And I think that the real harm with that type of environment happens when it continues and you start hearing your signs of intuition of, hey, I'm curious about this, or, oh, this doesn't feel right to me. But instead of taking the action that moves you into alignment towards that intuition, like following those signals, you start second guessing yourself, saying, yeah, but I'm not that, or that's not for me. And I think, empowering other people, especially women, is so empowering. It's so important to me, because when that happens, you can really change someone's life. You can either empower someone enough to build the life of their dream, to start the company or go for the promotion or change the job, even though they're only 8 months in, but it doesn't feel right to them. And then, they end up in a situation that is so much more aligned quicker, or you can really stunt someone's confidence and kind of keep them stuck second guessing themselves. So it is so important. And, I always try and pay it back, and I'm still, 29. So I guess I can say I'm still in my 20s, but I still have amazing female mentors. And I definitely, I have some interns who feel good. It's really important to me that they have an empowering and, autonomous and respectful experience. And then other women that I work with too.
Yeah, I think what you're really hitting on is, and we were talking earlier about this a bit, that like we all hold these like inner narratives with us and these stories about ourselves and the world, and that those are really shaped by like our external environments, right? So I think what you're talking about, it sounds like you were lucky enough to have these parents that were really sending you the messages that you like, you could do this, you can do what you want to do. And then, when you grow up, you've internalized that message, and that's become like part of your identity. And then you've been in situations where that's been reinforced and reaffirmed. And then that helps people like do hard things when you think you can, right? Versus being in an environment where you don't, or you have like self-limiting beliefs, right? Like, I can't do that, or that's not for me. And I was telling you earlier about a story where it was like earlier in my days as a psychologist, I hadn't written my book yet. I was just starting out, like sort of speaking and writing and things like that. But it started to get like a little bit of traction, but it didn't still felt like it wasn't mine yet. Or I didn't know, the story wasn't totally written. Not that it's written now, but it was just earlier on in my journey. And I had a colleague say like, well, why couldn't you be that person on NBC? Or why couldn't you be that sort of voice of X, Y, and Z? And I was like, I don't know. That seems like a stretch. But it did make me think like, yeah, why couldn't I be that person? Versus like just assuming someone has to be that person. Why can't it be me? And then lo and behold, I'm kind of getting out there, I'm writing more, and then I start getting like building platform, actually becoming, sort of a parent expert person on NBC just by happenstance, by being on Twitter and having someone reach out to me, like just totally, totally random. And the other thing you're talking about is this idea of alignment, and so from a health psych perspective, and authenticity can be sort of replaced with this idea of alignment, like you're living in sort of authenticity. But when we go to like define that, it's sort of hard to be like, well, what does that even mean? How do you operationalize that? How do you know when you're in it or not in it? But from health psych, when we think about like wellness, it's really when there's an alignment between what you're thinking, saying, feeling, and doing, and your sort of internal world is matching kind of with those four things. But then it's just a superpower when it's matched with your external environment. So if you can be in an environment where you're thinking something, you're saying it, you're feeling it, and you're doing it, and then that external environment's like reinforcing it and saying like, yeah, that's great, or keep going, that's really where you're like optimized. And that's why leadership training and coaching is really important to help leaders how to create those social environments or work environments to optimize people, to empower them. If for nothing else, like hopefully it's to help the person feel and live their best life, but you're going to get more out of them and better work out of them within organizations. But people, leaders carry our own narratives, right? So some of us have ideas like, well, you don't want to build someone up too much. You don't want them to be cocky. Like they're just narratives that are based on how we were raised, how we were parented, how we were led, that stick with us, right? And that shows up in leadership and coaching and workplaces that can really impact outcomes, business outcomes,
Yeah. It's so powerful. And I think, employers and mentors and peers too, especially can have, so like when you have friends that are so encouraging of you and want to follow you and comment on your work and say, you know, you're doing amazing, a follower of one, like, how can I share the word on this? That also has I think that it's so important. It is so important. And there's like always room for more. There's always room for more.
Always. Yeah. Yeah. And I earlier in my days, I was like working with this young woman, and there's just like a very simple metaphor, but I think about it all the time. And she had said, like, move towards the wells and away from the drains. She was sort of as like, you know, and it's all about sort of that alignment of, you know, like who you're around. And when you're around great people who are giving you energy, like you feel better, you perform and function better. And just like starting to pay attention, almost like if we bring this full circle, like, you know, like many people do with health things, you kind of like when something doesn't feel right with the people around you, oftentimes we make excuses or we don't move away without realizing actually the impact it's having on us and how it could be like holding us back. So you mentioned earlier in conversations about the impact of team dynamics and respect and how being seen and supported by a former boss, especially around dyslexia, really changed the way you showed up at work. What can leaders really learn from that experience?
Oh my God, so important. Yeah, okay, I'll give you a quick example. And I had two very interesting experiences. I had one boss who, again, like I remember I was in an interview and my biggest fear in work was I'm very dyslexic. I cannot spell for my life. And I had to plug in my computer during an interview and they were going to watch me type something live. We were going to kind of do like workflow together. And yeah. That's my worst nightmare. I mean, sharing my screen and watching someone.
Totally.
When I, you know.
My oldest kid's super dyslexic too. So I totally feel you.
And then the more you overthink it, the worse it gets. Like mine's so consumed by anxiety. So I was very nervous about it. And I plugged the computer in. And I mentioned as a joke, I was like, I'm really dyslexic. Like, oh gosh. And he goes, spelling doesn't matter. I'm not looking at it. Fine. It's a brainstorming exercise. Like, spell as poorly as you want. Like, the work better.
Awesome.
And immediately, I was so relaxed, so excited. My energy started flowing. My creativity. But he was heightened, and I was like, oh my God, like, I feel like, you know, I'm not going to be kind of ticked for this, or I don't need to be really anxious about it. Like, I can just be myself. And then all of a sudden, my ability to execute and think and be creative was like 1,000 times higher. I got the job, loved the job. It was an amazing experience. You know, before that role, I was in an opposite one where I learned, honestly, I learned more from that role than any other, but it was pretty boy leadership and a really, really bad experience and culture. And again, I'm really dyslexic. And I would make, I'd flip numbers, like a 14 would be a 41, or I would spell something wrong. And again, I was working 100-hour weeks and just moving really quickly and also dyslexic. And I was called things like stupid or, you know, really kind of made to feel poorly about really small errors. And it made my everything else get worse. Like the things that I was actually good at, I started second guessing myself on, or I wouldn't really take a risk. I didn't want to go the extra mile on the project because I was like a little embarrassed if it wasn't good or wasn't in line. And I didn't stop feeling like myself. And I stopped feeling for, you know, something that I was so passionate about, I kind of lost the passion. And it's so small. Those two examples are like two minor comments, one on an Excel doc saying like, like making all these errors sloppy or, you know, it doesn't look very smart. And the other one was just that, hey, don't worry about it. Spell as bad as you can, that's not the point. And those two minor comments had led to drastically different outcomes over the course of like months in my work, in my creativity, in my feeling for capabilities, my feeling of empowerment, my, you know, dedication to the fund, my willingness to stay late and dive into a project. And it's just, I use those two as examples because I think it is so powerful when you lean into somebody's, you know, strong suit, support people in their weaknesses and focus on building people up, you can transform someone who, you know, might not be like the A+ student into like an exceptional student if you take the time to really understand them and where they need support and you know, where they can go on their own. And I don't know, it's just, I think it's really, really important for me.
Yeah, 1,000%. We started doing these things at groups now, which I love, which is like individual assessments around like who you are and your own styles, like sort of preferences and things like that, challenges, all that. And then compiling it and having a snapshot of the team so you can get assessment of really the team personality. And then the individual has a map of how they're mapped against the team. But then it allows the team and the individual to know about like how to best use the person and lean into the strengths rather than their deficits and basically fill around the strengths. And for something like dyslexia, what I always say to my kid is like, listen, technology is built for this. Like, do not get hung up on this. Like, you need ideas. You need to be able to scribble a note on the counter so I know like where you are. And I think like that was from one of his awesome teachers. But technology helps with writing and editing and all of that, right? Yeah. So it's like your ideas and your creativity and your that matters. And also signaling that like, you're welcome here. You know what I mean? Like you and all of who you are in terms of like your strengths and your weaknesses, we value you as a team member. And why that matters from like a neuropsych perspective is that, and you were like describing it through your story, is that when we don't feel like we belong or we feel like potentially judged or criticized or we're going to get in trouble, our amygdala is firing, which is like our fight or flight response. It's the back of our brain. It's basically like a stress response. And when that happens, your frontal lobes and your amygdala are like inversely kind of correlated. So like when your amygdala is really firing, your frontal lobes, which is your creative thinking, your higher level thinking, is suppressed because you're kind of in basic operating mode. Like, am I in danger? Am I at risk? So you literally physiologically are not going to be your best when you're operating under stressed conditions. So part of the job of the leader, as you've been describing, is to like help quiet the amygdala, you know, through the way you're communicating and the signals you're sending, because you're going to get better, higher level, innovative thinking when someone can actually activate their frontal lobes in a more, you know, so that those things aren't just feel good. And you really described how this impacted your performance. And that's pretty much like why, right?
That's fascinating. I mean, yeah, it's really interesting to you because I didn't know the whole kind of scientific graph behind that, but it's similar to like when you get really stressed and you release cortisol, your body goes into fight or flight because your body doesn't know the difference between real stress and stress.
Exactly.
And it makes everything more difficult. Everything more difficult. So
that's exactly it. So it's like, you know, those really hard bosses that think like, oh, this is the way of the world now or whatever. It's like, well, you're actually working against yourself because you're like getting like your people aren't optimized. So like, how do you set clear expectations? They still can be very high, right? But also be like supportive and, you know, empowering and all the things that help people feel like they're best at work.
Totally. Yeah, I think, yeah. And I think the other thing too is like, there is a strong suit in everyone. You just have to want to uncover it and build it and invest in it. And when you do, you have incredible employees because so motivated and part of something, part of a team, and like their voice matters and they have ownership. They want to be there. They want to work harder. They want to be creative. They want to be a really collaborative, engaged team member. And yeah, I think it's really easy to be critical or short or dismissive of, you know, how you didn't graduate from the school or you didn't nail this case study off the bat. But if we got to slow down a little bit and look deeper and really build and invest in people for who they are and what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And if leaders are kind of like, all right, I don't believe in this, like this, I want people to, you know, be acclimated, like kind of onboarded the way I was onboarded or have that kind of mentality. It's like, well, this then can turn into a business problem for you because of like the way of the world's a bit different. And if you're not actually bringing people in, you know, you're going to have like a retention or engagement problem. We know highly connected where teams where people feel great are 21% more profitable, have 59% better retention. This is like totally tied to dollars if you care that nothing else, you know?
Totally. Yeah, it is so, so true. That is so true.
Well, it's so nice chatting. Anything like, you know, I didn't ask you about that you'd want to bring up here or anything on your mind before we get ready to end?
No. I mean, if you had any like last topic that or question that I could answer, I'm happy to. But yeah, I would just say like the biggest takeaway from me is, you know, what I'm working on now. Let's go get healthy. deconstruct their lives to feel better. So if anyone wants to follow along, our we write wellness guides that come out on every Wednesday. We've seen them on. So they're very tactical guides. The whole mission of Let's Build It is helping people deconstruct your day-to-day life through the products in your shower, to what you put on your breakfast, how you structure your time, how you order takeout, the lip gloss you put on your lips, the mascara you put on your eyes, the pan that you cook your eggs with. If we can make small tweaks and changes, you're going to feel a lot better today. And the byproduct is that we're going to prevent chronic disease down the road and help people live longer, healthier, happier, more vibrant lives. For me, it's really personal because when I feel better, I feel more motivated. And, you know, all those things that my bosses or my parents or my friends have done for me and like of motivating me, saying, you know, you can do it. You can do anything you want to do. I am able to build that same physically inside me when I take care of myself. Here's how I live. And I do think that you literally get clear-headed, you feel better, you're more creative, you get this, you make decisions. And I think the most important thing is to be efficient, even louder, obeying your body. So that is the mission of what feel good. But yeah, that's me. That's where I'm at. And if anyone has any other questions, sure. Where to find both myself and my children.
Great. And where did you say they can find you? Did you say LinkedIn or something else?
LinkedIn's great. And then we're also, Let's Feel Good is on Substack at letsfeelgoodsubstack.com.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much, Annie, for your work and for taking time with me today. And looking forward to following your journey. And I'm already thinking of like a handful of people I need to introduce you to.
I love it.
Kind of in this type of space. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you for having me on. This is such a fun conversation and I really enjoyed it. So I appreciate it.
Awesome. Of course.
Thank you.
Bye.